Things have changed since last time I was here. Well, good afternoon, good to see you. Some familiar faces around here, which is good. So we will spend the next 30 minutes talking about this company's research project, which is the project I'm doing with assistance from Peter and Alan. And I have some of my board advisors here in the room as well. So in this 30 minutes, what I would like to hear is your experience of applying this country's requirements in relation to present value measurements in IFRS. And in this discussion, I would like us to focus on requirements for measurement of rental liabilities in IAS 19, measurement of liabilities in IAS 37, and value in use calculations in accordance to IAS 36. The reason I mention these three is because these three are the focus of our research project at the moment, so this is where input is most helpful. Before I hand over to you for discussion, I'm just going to spend a few minutes just to explain first why we're doing this research project, and then I'm just going to highlight some of the areas of research and some of our findings so far. So, as we all know, present value measurements are very common. Commonly used in financial reporting, and for present value measurement we need to use discount rates. We also know that IFRS requirements for discount rates differ, so we have one rate in IAS 19, one rate in IAS 37, and so on. And during our first agenda consultation, which was in 2011, we had about 50 comment letters, which included some of you, saying that these differences in discount rate requirements are not well understood by people and that they cause inconsistencies and that IFRS should be changed or ISB should do something about this. So we are doing this, we are doing this research project to review discount rate requirements in IFRS, identify any inconsistencies and research whether there is any either standard setting action or other action that should be designed, should be done by the ISB to help with these inconsistencies. So in this research we identified six different aspects of present value measurement requirements we are considering. They are set out on slide three. I'm not going to go through each one of them in my presentation. I'm just going to mention three of them briefly, which I think might be most relevant. So the first one I'm going to talk about is discount rate components, which is looking at what components are we considering in discount rate measurement for a particular standard. So I've set out our findings on this on slide six. There's a table on slide six which looks at that. And just looking at this table, we can see that time value of money or something we call risk-free rates is a part of every present value measurement, is always a part of a discount rate. But there are other things like adjustment for risk or adjustment for liquidity that are not. And maybe looking at this table, you may ask obvious question, why is IAS 19 so different? Why is the discount rate not more like the rates for other measurements? And one answer, one reason for this difference may be simply because the measurement objective for IAS 19 is different from measurement objective for other items that rely on present value measurement. Unfortunately, IAS 19 is actually not explicit in its measurement objective. And just one point on IAS 19, which I found interesting, is in this research we have done a little outreach with investors. And in discussions with investors, they actually say IAS 19 is the rate they like the best. And they say, even though we know this rate doesn't actually reflect the characteristics of the liability that it is measuring, we like it because we know it's based on market information. We know a company says it's iBox 15-year rate. I can look it up. I can predict what the measurement is going to be, and I can show off to my colleagues, look, I know what this company is going to have as a pension liability as a year end. They actually like it the best, which, you know, it was interesting, let's say. So moving on, so from the components, let me just talk briefly about the measurement methodology. So this is looking at basically the approach at arriving at the discount rate or the overall present value measurement, and I have set out our findings in slide 8. There is another table here, and for example, this looks at things, do we use pre-tax or post-tax rates, nominal or real, and so on. So just looking at this table, we can actually see there is a fair amount of consistency in methodology. So all measurements either require or allow use of pre-tax rates in measurement. Of course, pre-tax rates coupled with pre-tax cash flows. But in our outreach and practice, what we have found is that the pre-tax requirement in IAS 36 can cause issues sometimes. These rates are not easily obtainable, and the companies prefer to use post-tax information, of course, together with post-tax amount. We have done a little bit of research also to see what regulators do about this, and I found that there are some differences here in that some jurisdictions, in relation to IAS 36, in some jurisdictions, regulators actually say, look, post-tax rate with post-tax cash flows gives you the same outcome as pre-tax rate and pre-tax cash flows. Let companies just do what is easier for them, makes more sense. In other jurisdictions, regulators actually issue, I don't know what they're called, notices, or they actually require companies to restate their statements to disclose and show the pre-tax rate information, which, you know, causes angst for some. So that is just a piece little anecdote for you from the methodology. And I'm just going to finish with a few words about impact of discount rates on performance reporting. So obviously, depending on what rate we use or what components are included in this rate, the amount that we recognize as interest in unwinding of discount is going to differ. So if risk adjustment is there or not, it's going to impact the amount of interest. But there are other things that also impact the amount of interest that we recognize that actually are more methodology related. So say if you have your measurement, say IAS 37 liability, that you actually consider or include risk as a part of your measurement. Now we can reflect risk either as an adjustment to the rate or adjustment to the cash flows, and the end result, mathematically or theoretically, should be the same. However, depending on whether we reflect this adjustment to the rates or to the cash flows, is going to impact the amount we recognize as unwinding of discount in this given period. Overall, there is no difference, but it impacts that period. So it's interesting. It was interesting to note that, and you know, a discussion about performance reporting wouldn't be complete without mentioning of OCI. So. And this is relevant here as well. So I'm just going to mention it briefly. And again, an anecdote related to investors. Because what investors, well, few investors I spoke to have told me is that they, in their words, they don't trust what preparers do with IAS 37 and the rates they apply. They consider that these rates do not move sufficiently with the market, even though they should be. And they think the reason for that is that IAS 37 requires rate reassessment to go to profit or loss, and therefore reflecting every market movement will cause volatility, which preparers seek to avoid. Whereas on the other hand, IAS 19 requires rate reassessment to go to OCI, and investors seem much happier with that because they feel that the rates there are much more reflective of the actual market rates. Not for that liability, but for the bonds, but you know, they are much more trustworthy in their ways. So OCI seems to also make impact. So I'll stop myself here, and I will just hand over to you for questions and for discussion. So what I'd like to find out from you is where you have, in your personal experience, in your company's issues, or where are the most common issues with application of discount rate requirements, either in arriving at the rate you use, or explaining that rate to auditors, to regulators, or with your investors. And then if we have time, I would also like your input on whether you think there are any inconsistencies in discount rates that ISB should address.
Thanks, Aida. Any views on this topic?
I understand there are some differences regarding the treatment of discount rate among IFRS, each topic of IFRS. But regarding the agenda paper one, this project is a high priority project. In my view, it's not a high priority, it should be a middle or low priority compared with other projects. And in addition, I have a concern regarding the discussion of disclosure on page 12. Some people are saying that this in IS-36, they may ask a disclosure of at each level of cash generating unit. Mm-hmm. I think that's over disclosure. If you disclose too many discount rate, it's very confusing. You need to reconcile the discount rate. I believe that a little over disclosure. That's my view.
Thanks for that. Any other views, Frank?
Obviously, in a lot of this, there's a lot of judgment used, and these sorts of rates obviously aren't observable in many contexts, IS-36 and so on. I do think it's odd, but probably not surprising that the users have said they prefer reliability over relevance, because that seems to be the message. They want a reportable number that they can then impute going forward their own cash flow assessment versus relevance fees. IS-19 is a particularly troublesome one with the guidance in there right now around the high quality corporate bonds versus your government rate. I just think, again, it comes back to the reliability versus relevance argument. We need to decide what faithfully represents time value here, and more than that is the risks of the liability. So I don't see that we should continue to live with this differences between the various standards. I think we should bring them together. We should have the same common approach. It's never going to remove estimates and judgment, but at least we'll get to a more consistent approach.
I think that it's perceived reliability. Because in particular, I would be surprised if anybody could actually reliably come up with what we have as a discount rate for IS-19. Because we don't have a deep market for high quality bonds over the period that we're looking at, we had to create a model to come up with it. It's a model that the industry and the actuaries could live with. So I think that it's actually not reliable and it's not relevant in the long run. And I think people then use it incorrectly. But that's my perspective. I think we have challenges with this. The reason that we're having this discussion is because it requires judgment and it's specific to the risks in each circumstance, right? So I don't know how you actually get that consistency anyway, to be quite honest. But I don't think it's as reliable as people think it is, because it's certainly not transparent.
To ask me a question, what would you do instead then?
You know what, I was grappling on this as to, is it worth spending time and effort to come up with consistency? Because the reality is, to be consistent, you're going to have to go to full fair value on your balance sheet, in theory, right?
But you're concerned about the relevance and reliability of the particular rate for IS-19. I guess that's part of the choice of rate there, and part of the fact that they're very long-term rates, and part of the fact there's not much market. So, is there a better alternative available, or all the alternatives going to have some of the same problems?
I think I just don't think the solution is not necessarily the consistency, because it creates a whole new model for accounting, in my view, if you do that.
Yeah, my colleague, of course, in insurance, we're looking at the asset side, right? Where this are invested in, and I think also in many companies, the pensions are also invested in certain assets, and maybe we should look at that. There are, I think, other alternatives to that. But what do you think regarding I'm only struggling with this OCI, because in pensions, now also with the insurance project we're discussing, we are at least allowing that UK changes in the discount rates driven by market are then reflected in OCI and not in P&L, and in other standards we don't allow that. But I think it's really not consistent, and we have a few of that.
For banks, it doesn't matter because the volatility in OCI is an issue for us for capital.
Yeah, right. It's a specific regulatory issue.
I just want to remind, we have had discussion about the discount rate use for pensions, because we have seen some years that using the last day rate may have major impact on the evaluation of BDO, which goes up and down with a huge amount. And this is got something that doesn't make sense regarding long-term engagement. So, besides the fact that you look at all the way discount rates are asked for, is it possible to think if a discount rate at the 31st of December has makes sense for a long-term liability, because if this discount rate change in the last days of the year, the liability will completely change of value.
Nobody's better. In Germany, we have a 5-year average, but now the press is full of. Does that really reflect the current obligations of the company?
Especially
in this interest environment.
Yes, and if it goes up and down for an obligation that you will have, you keep for your when you present your account 1 month later, it may have completely changed of value. So does it make sense to have exactly the last day with a risk of having up and down? I'm wondering.
Okay.
Just want to make a few points. I mean, I'm with Hiroshi that I think this is probably a mid-priority, a high-priority item. I think, on the other hand, I do welcome that you are looking at this, and I think we do need to have more coherent or consistent principle-based approach that you can articulate to people. And I tried a few years ago summarizing the different rates we were using, and I couldn't explain what the rationale was with it. So, as we've heard, the pension area is perhaps a little bit more rules-based than principles-based. And the point about volatility, we obviously, as preparers, tell us to use a market rate that has a lot of volatility in it, and obviously we would like some of that volatility, I think, to go into OCI and not be booked in the income statement. But that's not surprising.
Kevin?
No, I think if you're going to go down this discount rates, then consistency in application in similar events. So for us, I don't see a difference in mining between a pension fund obligation and the decommissioning obligation of my mines. You know, my mines are running for the next 50, 60 years. In fact, my pensioners is closed. They're going to die before my mines. So my pension goes to OCI and my decommissioning goes to the income statement. It's just illogical.
Yeah.
10% of this year's profits was changing discount rates on our decommissioning obligation. Effectively, 10% negative.
It wasn't even 10% positive. 10% negative. And Kevin, I assume decommissioning as well as pensions are quite significant in the balance sheet. I haven't looked at your balance sheet.
Our pension, we've got a pension asset of $200 million, and our decommissioning liability discounted is $870 million. But discounted from now till, I think our last mine currently is anticipated to close in 2110. And you ask us to do cash flows out till then.
So are your investors aware of these, that you actually apply different measurements?
It's disclosed in the notes. They don't ask questions, so I don't know what they're aware of.
They're
not
asking.
Any other thoughts, comments on that?
Do you want to just explain what we think we're going to be doing, the output for this?
Well,
initially?
I mean, this is a research project, so of course anything can happen.
They can abolish discount.
No.
Can we put in a request?
So, Yeah, I mean, that we will obviously go to the board and summarize, present our findings from outreach, including discussion with you. The way I see it personally, and there are different views, I guess, is that we will publish a research paper. So I say research paper, not discussion paper, because I don't see this as inevitably leading into a media standard setting action on discount rates per se, but I would, a research paper would basically lay out the differences and inconsistencies and our findings and just invite people to comment themselves on what they think is, you know, if anything is required of the ISP to be done. Perhaps the outcome there will be some education type material as opposed to standard setting action. We also have, in parallel, we are doing projects, research projects on IS-19. We are just starting on IS-37, and we're also going to do some work on IS-36 as a result of post-implementation review of IFRS-3. So these three research projects are actually opportunities to pick up any of the findings specific to discount rate and actually embed them. So there are different ways this can be pan out, but, you know, the board is not going to forget about discount rates.
We could suggest that we don't need to take action in some areas. We could identify where perhaps action might be appropriate and either take a big bang, or as Ava says, you wait and say we've actually got active projects for three of those, so we don't need to do anything. In other words, we've got this part and we'll deal with them as we go along. And, you know, I keep looking at Kevin about another narrow change and another narrow change, and it may just be that we've acknowledged there's an issue, that we deal with them when they come up. You know, depends on how deep and horrible the issue is, to be honest. But our initial sense is it's not as bad or as a deeper problem as perhaps people see when they write to us.
I have registered the fact that Kevin doesn't want to discount his decommissioning liability.
It really makes no difference. You know, our undiscounted is currently sitting at $3.5 billion, but we disclosed that. But you know, the discount is 800-something million. But I think I more prefer, you know, if I'm going to have, so I don't want a narrow change on pensions, and then 8 months later have a narrow change on assets, and 8 months later I'm going to have a narrow change on discount rates.
That makes eminent sense, and I think it ties into the advice that both Bob and Malcolm gave us earlier, which is, what's your strategy, guys? And are you going to introduce a bunch of piecemeal changes to financial reporting, or are you going to be smart about it and deal with all these cross-cutting issues in a consistent, you know, organized fashion? And that's at least the way I'd like to do it, you know. But this is one of those areas where some people may not like the outcome, so it's more like, hey, take your time, and deal with this one over here, and deal with that one over there.
Look at Kevin's minds.
But part of the outcome is that, you know, if you're going to go for the decommission, you should treat it the same way as pension funds, because it's counterintuitive that as we start to enter what is perceived to be an interest rate rise cycle, that I'm going to make profits. It's counterintuitive. It's like the own credit one.
Well, is that because maybe you don't recognize all the assets that you actually...
it's unfunded.
Effectively own or managing that aren't on your balance sheet.
Yeah, tell me to put reserves and resources on my balance sheet. You can do anything you like. That's my biggest asset.
Okay, then the last word on discount rates to Olivia.
I just want to know if you are looking about other national sector, like US cap. Are you looking if they have some kind of discount rate?
If you are comparing the requirements,
understand if the need, because I suppose that you look if there is a need to have a unique method of discount rate. So maybe it's useful to look if other things that unique method is useful.
We certainly look at what, you know, US GAAP requirements are, and there's even more differences there, so I'm not sure, you know. But it's certainly a useful exercise, as you say, and it's drawing to light some of the issues we had with on credit with IS-37, which I hope is resolved. result, but yes, that.
No.
No?
No.
Like, really? Sorry, can't.
Own credit's not result. It's not. You may have thought it's result by putting it into OCI, but the resolution is determination of the measurement.
Were you saying your VOC 37 is resolved?
No, no, no. What's the inclusion of own credit and discount rate in IAS 37? My understanding is that companies do not, I know IAS 37 is not explicit. I know there was a different discussion, there was agenda rejection. And my understanding after that is that that was taken and that companies actually do not include own credit in the rate they use in IAS 37, apart from maybe a few Canadian companies that still battle their auditors. But am I wrong?
Yeah, so I don't include own credit in my discounting rate, let's say my decommissioning obligation, but you compel me to do own credit in my long-term debt. So again, I've got...
Kevin will just run the way to their own credit.
Oh, you mean in general?
He said they would resolve the problem.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of OCI.
Yeah.
No,
because we're not like banks, which is for industrials, the own credit is not an issue. But now it's become an issue because of IFRS 9. Which, if you reissued as IFRS 9 for banks, then us industrials might be happy with IFRS 9.
Sorry, Kevin, it's not in the scope of.
No, I know.
Okay, thank you for that.
Thank you.